Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thanks for connecting with us. This week we're in New Oxford Street in this building that houses the Radio Academy and Radio Centre and Digital Radio UK. And we've just had a board meeting of the Radio Independence Group, and the vice chair of it is Mike Halley. And the reason I wanted to talk to you, Mike, is because you were awarded the inaugural Gold Award, were you not, last week at the Radio Production Awards. So congratulations. Tell us a bit about what you do, because you're a bit of a man of mystery.
Well, I've got quite a varied background. It started off as 17 years at British Aerospace as an engineer, an electronics engineer. But at the same time, I was doing various things with local voluntary groups and in my trade union as well. So there was a lot of useful experience that I was able to apply when I turned to radio production, which is well over 20 years ago, initially as a freelance. And then setting up a network of freelancers, which I suppose went back to the trade union activity, all that sort of thing. And then the next obvious step really was to get together with some other freelancers and form an independent radio production company. And before very long, a couple of years' time, I was wondering, why is there no trade association? TV had theirs and they'd done all sorts of important things. This is Pat, of course. They've done all sorts of important things to get their rights back and just generally to engage with broadcasters on how they were used. And I found there was a bit of history. There'd been about three attempts to set up a trade body for radio indies in the 90s. They'd all fallen apart. So it was actually a very good time to do it because Pat had just won back rights for TV. And if we didn't get together quickly, we were not going to get the same thing in radio. And I sent out an email in February 2004, so it's coming up to 10 years ago, really just hoping for a few like-minded people to say, let's keep in touch by email. And it just snowballed from there. We had a meeting within a few weeks.
You call yourself now the vice chair, don't you? You stepped down from chairman. I have to say, as a member of the board, I don't sense any lessening in your role.
Well, I suppose it's more sort of working role, and I did step down once before from chair to be secretary to the excellent Neil Gardner in his years as chair, and very happy to work with whoever is willing to be chair to do a lot of the sort of day-to-day work, things like running commissioning surveys and talking at length to new entrants to the industry and so on. So yes, I'm still doing a lot.
I characterize
the nature of setting up an organisation that runs on voluntary effort.
I characterise you as somebody who's got a bit of a kind of shop steward tendency, and I'm interested to know that you did work in the trade union movement, because I've sat in committees with you, particularly talking to the BBC, and you have that forensic approach. That you're very keen on detail. And, you know, some of us in this industry are a bit bish-bash-bosh about what we do, and you wouldn't let us get away with that, would you?
No, and you're probably right. I'm sure that does go back to the trade union years, although also one of my early sort of spare-time voluntary things was helping set up a law centre, and detail was very much important, obviously, in that. But you can have general airy-fairy arguments with people who've got a different viewpoint and not really get anywhere. It's the detail that you can nail people on and sometimes make a little bit of progress here and there.
What do you think broadly, Mike, of the BBC as an organisation? Because it's the BBC with whom you're engaged most of the time, trying to move the behemoth forwards as you would see it.
It's funny because fundamentally, I love the BBC. I think it's a terrific institution. I quite often go to fairly remote parts of the world for my holidays, cycling and so on. And when it comes up, people will say, what's your name? Where are you from? What do you do? Mention the BBC and they want to shake your hands. They want to talk about something they've heard in World Service, or they want to talk about hearing Manchester United play on some relay from a Radio 5 live coverage or something like that. What is frustrating about the BBC is this feeling that it is rather too enclosed and that it doesn't have anything much to learn from the outside world. So I suppose that's what's driven me in these almost 10 years now with Radio Independence Group, that I really passionately believe, not just for our own selfish reasons, that more programming should be at least open to competition from indies.
Do you think they're transparent enough? That's the interesting point. Do they tell us enough about how their business works?
Absolutely not. And I think they probably know that if they were transparent, it would be all in our favour. I think more of a mixed economy with indies and in-house competing openly and transparently, so that, as the BBC Trust has said, the best ideas get on air regardless of source. That is almost my motto at the moment.
So here's the thing. If independent production is so cheap, is such good value for money, why doesn't commercial radio bring more independent companies on board to enhance its programming?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that actually there's quite a lot more programming by independent companies for commercial radio than people realise. It's not obviously usually on the same model as the BBC, where they're putting out offers for big one-off documentaries and so on, or strands, but it is there. But the other thing is, of course, is the sheer economics. And that is partly why I support public service broadcasting in general and BBC in particular. That if you want these high-quality speech and music networks where you're not just looking for the cheapest possible format, then it does need some sort of public service licensing. Even in America, where the ethos obviously is very much free market capitalism, they nonetheless have public radio, because you need that kind of... It's a different model, of course, but it is getting funds to do high-quality radio for its own sake. That is what we're after. I would love to see the economics of commercial radio improve so that we could, or they could afford to put more out to competition to indies as well.
Now, I've painted this picture of you at BBC meetings, round board tables. People might think this is probably some smooth New Labour kind of guy who lives in Islington. But no. Where do you live?
In a little place called Scotland Well, which is about 25 miles north of Edinburgh. It's countryside. No, I've never lived in an Islington-type place. And to call me New Labour would be almost as insulting as to call me Tory.
So you must spend a long time on East Coast Railways.
I do, and I actually like it very much. It is a very civilised way to travel if you have to keep coming to London, and I treat them as sort of 5 hours of a travelling office.
And what kind of radio programmes are you making? I guess primarily for Radio 4.
Primarily for Radio 4, documentaries, quite a range of sometimes current affairs. For example, we've just done one looking at the questionable basis for these PISA education tables, which are very much in the news at the moment. We did one recently for an aspect of the history of Remembrance Day. We've been doing those every year for some years now. It's a sort of personal interest of mine. We do quite a bit of history, and obviously with my background, we do a bit of science and technology as well, and sometimes just general interest features.
Overall then, Mike, are you optimistic about the independent sector and perhaps more broadly radio in general?
Very optimistic about both. The independent sector, because I think that it will come to a point where the BBC, the walls will have to come down. It's happened in television, it's going to go further in television. The financial pressures on them mean that really the only solution is to be more open and to discard some of the overhead expenses that take up so much of their budgets at the moment. Radio in general, it's interesting that at one time it was thought to be on its way out due to television, due to pictures. And of course, that's not the case. There's many times when people still just want to listen to voices and music while they do something else, which is taking up their vision. And it's getting, in many ways, easier to do, and easier to do it well, thanks to technology. And I think it's got a great future.
Congratulations on your gold award. Where have you put it, by the way?
It is, at the moment, sitting on the dining table. I haven't got a trophy cupboard yet. Maybe I should get one.
You will have. Mike Halley, Vice Chair of RIG and Gold Award winner at the RPAs. Thanks very much for talking to the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's have some news, shall we, from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
This week, it's been reported that one of the announcements expected by Ed Vasey on December the 16th is the announcement of a second national commercial DAB multiplex. It's also thought there won't be any dates confirmed for possible switchover, instead leaving it to listener demand. Popular East Midlands presenter Twiggy is back on air after leaving Capital FM's Drive Time. He was at Radio Trent for over 15 years and is now joining Oak 107 to co-host Breakfast. And as we enter the award season once again this year, the Commercial Radio Awards will be sponsored by Arqiva, Radio Centre has just confirmed, and details of the Radio Academy Awards 2014 are also out this week. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
UK-voiceover.com.
Audio production starting from £3.
UK-voiceover.com.
On Twitter at UKVoiceover.
This time last year, the talk was all about the BBC moving home. BBC Radio News programmes moved to New Broadcasting House, and it was farewell to the old Studio S1, where prime ministers and opinion formers have been interrogated for 14 years.
The World at One. This is Martha Carney with 45 minutes of news and comment.
It's 6 o'clock. Good morning. This is Today with Evan Davis and Justin.
It's 10 o'clock. This is The World Tonight with Robin Lusk.
This is Martha Carney here from The World at One, sitting in S1 with its charming 1970s beige Hessian walls. In front of me is absolutely disgusting studio desk. Honestly, there are years and years of journalists spilt coffee and bits of toast, and it's really crummy. In fact, when I first started presenting, I was rather excited to be going into the same studio where I'd heard the Today programme from so many years. I expected something, to be honest, a great deal smarter than this old dump. So S1, I'm delighted to be leaving you.
Farewell, Studio S1, and hello, New Broadcasting House. This week in 82, Radio 1 and 2 were separated totally for the first time. Before then, they'd shared a lot of programmes. And it's 27 years this week since we lost the man who made the final announcement ever on Radio 2's predecessor, the BBC Light programme.
Well, there we end broadcasting in the Light programme, not just for today, but, as it seems, forever. The Light programme, that is, as it's known now, is closing down. But in only a few hours' time, the BBC with Paul Hollingdale will open up on 247 metres and 1500 metres and VHF. That's at 5:30. And then at 7 o'clock on 247 metres, Tony Blackburn will open and swing into our new Radio 1 network.
The voice of Roger Moffat, who later played a key role in the early days of Sheffield's Radio Hallam. So much so that on his death this week in 1986, the station covered his funeral extensively.
At 9:15 this morning, we flew over the Hackenthorpe area of Sheffield and scattered part of Roger's ashes over the fields towards Beighton. At a similar time, Sheffield funeral director Richard Heath, of John Heath and Sons, was leaving the city to carry out the second part of Roger's wishes.
Farewell, Roger Moffat, aged 59, and like so many broadcasters, he was able to craft his own on-air obituary.
I'd love to. When I die, as everybody has to, I would like to see how much I get on, you know, whether I'm on the front page or nowhere at all. It would be nice, but I won't be able to do that.
Staying in Yorkshire, it's 29 years since the Bradford station Pennine extended to Huddersfield. And happy birthday this week to the Mansfield lad who went national.
When I was at this station, XFM, Ricky Gervais was there, Stephen Merchant, Jimmy Carr did the show before me, Zoe Ball did Drive Time. It was Adam and Joe were there. Yeah. Everyone was there. It was just a really extraordinary place at that time.
Happy birthday, Richard Bacon. New stations this week in history. 4 years ago, hello to Absolute 80s, a new station for, they said, reluctant adults.
How does this make you feel? Good? Would you like to feel this all the time? Then get ready for Absolute 80s, the UK's only all-80s radio station. Launches this morning on DAB in London or at absolute80s.com.
Also this week, it's 25 years since Power FM launched on the South Coast. It was a sister to Ocean, and the first time two conveniently neighbouring FM transmitters under the same licence would have been distinguished by format rather than localness.
You've listened for the sound of things to come. Now it's here. Music radio for the 90s. Power FM, with new people, new programmes and great music. While the others are talking, we're rocking 24 hours a day, every day on 103.2. Power
FM. This week in 1964, one of the most influential pirate stations of all prepared for launch.
And with Carl Denver, we have a time check for you. It's 25 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock, and that, of course, was Swanee River. Stand by now for a special announcement. Radio London will discontinue broadcasting at 2 p.m. today for final adjustments on the transmitter. Regular broadcasting will continue tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
The early signals as Radio London tested from the North Sea this week in 1964. The station was to become the template for Radio 1. So with the announcement 2 years ago that Dave Berry would replace Johnny Vaughan on Capital London, Johnny Walker returning to Radio 2 this week in 99, and Northants 96 launched by Harrowood 27 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
That's just about your lot for this week. It's been the Radio Today programme, a TDC production. We'll have something very similar, possibly even better next week. Thanks for listening.